And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Not too long ago on the morning show, we had three alums of the Kemper School, Kemper Center, that was in existence for well over a century, educating mostly young women in the city of Kenosha. A big anniversary was celebrated, and it was great to have three alums of Kemper with us on the morning show. Today, we're returning to the topic of Kemper, but this time more in the present day, talking about what Kemper Center has been but is right now, and maybe talk a little bit as well about what it might look like in the future. We are happy to have with us in the studios today Ed Kubicki, who is the executive director of Kemper Center, and Robin Ingruel, who is the administrator at Kemper. They've both been there for roughly 5 years or so. And for those of you who have not seen Kemper with your own eyes, Kemper is an absolutely beautiful gem on the cultural landscape of Kenosha, right there on historic 3rd Avenue in Kenosha, just south of downtown and perched right on beautiful Lake Michigan. And it is a gorgeous historic site, a conference center that hosts quite a lot of different interesting events over the years. And the story of Kemper is a fascinating one that we will explore over the next few minutes. Ed Kubicki, Robin Ingruel, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Good morning.
Morning to you, Greg. Thanks for having both of us on.
Happy to have you here. Happy to have you. I've spent many a happy hour at Kemper Center over these many years that I've been in southeastern Wisconsin, all kinds of different events there, and still have not explored every nook and cranny of that lovely campus. And so there are a few things I still need to see, but I've certainly been in Durkee Mansion and Founders Hall and the Kemper Chapel, the Anderson Arts Center, and of course the outside grounds as well are all so incredibly lovely. First of all, I'd like to get a little bit of background from each of you, since this is our first time talking on the morning show. Ed, as I said, you've been executive director of Kemper Center for the last 5 years, but your professional career before that is pretty different. Explain to our listeners what you were doing before.
Well, I was a firefighter, paramedic for the past for 30 years prior to coming on to Kemper Center, and my whole goal in life then was more so saving lives and protecting property. Now what I'm trying to do with my life with Kemper Center is protecting property so many lives can enjoy it. So I just changed it around a little bit.
And, I like that.
Protect the historic aspect of the building and the grounds and all the wonderful things that happened there in the past and all the good things that are going to come to us in the future.
That's great. Where were you a firefighter?
Highland Park, Illinois.
Oh, I lovely love the community.
Yes.
And what brought you to Kenosha then?
Well, I was always born and raised here.
Ah.
And I took three firefighter tests back in the day, and Highland Park hired me first. And I built up a brotherhood with those individuals there, moved down there for a spell, and was able to move back to our community here and work in Highland Park at the same time, and here we are.
Wow, very, very good. I have a couple of good friends who live in Highland Park, so I've been down there quite a lot. It's a lovely community.
Beautiful community.
And I'm glad that you and your colleagues worked hard to keep it safe, so
Thank
to speak.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. So tell us about coming aboard Kemper Center, just kind of how that happened, and was it the sort of opportunity you were even looking for, or did it kind of fall into your lap accidentally?
Well, I think it was a combination of both. I'm also a county board supervisor, so I'm fully apprised of all our county divisions, you know, whether it be parks, highways, the sheriff's department, public works, whatever it might be. And I knew about Kemper. We've some of my family members were married in the chapel there at Kemper, and I've gone to events there, you know, that they had in Kemper in the past before coming on board. And I always like history. I love architecture. And the opportunity came up that there was an opening. I applied for it. And the rest is history, I guess.
Very good. And it's about that time that Robin Ingruel became administrator. Did you come aboard right after Ed or right before him?
A little before. I started as a volunteer, and it evolved into the volunteer coordinator, which evolved into this.
Very good. Did you have some connection with Kemper before becoming a volunteer?
Not really, no. I've walked past it a lot, but I never really had a part of it. I didn't go to school there.
Uh-huh.
I had relatives who went to school there.
So that maybe helps explain why you knew kind of what Kemper was.
Yes.
But otherwise, did anything in particular draw you to want to be a volunteer there?
I started as a decorator for the Durkee Mansion, and I have an art background, so it seemed to be a good fit. I was retired from my real world, and
yeah.
I said, oh, now I can get into the arts more.
Fantastic. Well, very good. Well, certainly a lot of our listeners have been in the Durkee Mansion and seen just how lovely it is at Christmas time and at other times of the year. So we actually probably should spend a little time talking about the history of why this beautiful place came into existence in the first place back in the 1860s. Who wants to be our resident historian and kind of tell the early story?
I'm going to let Robin start, and then I'm going to come on after she starts with
all
talking
right
about that.
Well, it started all with the Durkee Mansion. Senator Durkee was building it. He lived there only 4 years, and then he was appointed territorial governor of the territory of Utah.
Mm.
So then the Sisters of St. Mary, which I believe was an East Coast Episcopal order, came and opened a school. They rented first and then eventually purchased the property, and all the additional areas were built on after there, the chapel being the next place that was built on there, and that was built in 1875. So the school opened in 1870, and it ran till 1975, which is a nice long run.
You bet it is, absolutely. And when I was talking to the three alums, I don't remember how long ago that was, but in coordination with some anniversary, and I don't even remember specifically what the anniversary was for Kemper Hall.
It was their 150th anniversary of the school, I believe. And they had to postpone it a year or so because of COVID.
Right. But as we were talking, it was just really interesting to not only hear about their own experiences as part of the school, as alums, as students there, but also they kind of talked a little bit about those painful last few years when, of course, schools like that all across the country began just kind of dwindling, times change and so on. And ultimately, of course, that painful decision had to be made for Kemper Hall, the school, to close. What can you tell us about what happened at that point in time when there was not going to be a school there anymore in terms of what allowed Kemper to survive the wrecking ball, if you will?
Well, a bunch of alumni, one in particular, Mrs. Enroth, Penny Enroth, she coordinated a group of people, and they started a foundation, and they put their own blood, sweat, and tears into preserving the place. And then between the government agencies and the county took over
the actual running of the actual Kemper Center itself at that time. And as Robin said, we can't mention enough that Mrs. Enroth was the catalyst, along with many others, to help save Kemper Center. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
She is still quite active in supporting us.
A force of nature, absolutely.
Yes.
I just spoke to her yesterday, so it's very fresh in my mind about what she wants to happen with Kemper Center, and it's continue to grow and be a part of Kenosha.
Right. So, Ed, you're in a very good position to explain exactly what the relationship is between Kenosha County and Kemper Center.
And
kind of the agreement that was reached and the way in which that has been essential to Kemper going on.
Yeah, I can talk about that in depth. What we do at Kemper is we lease the building and the grounds from the county, and then every August I lease it from them for $1. But we maintain, you know, the outside grounds, the grounds itself, and then some of the interior stuff. And then the county helps us with utility bills and with the actual building structure. In other words, mortar, the brick and mortar stuff, roofing, windows, tuck pointing, woodwork, cement work, and that kind of thing. So it's kind of a private-public partnership, and it's also one of the Kenosha County parks. It's based on 17 and a half acres between the Anderson Arts Center and our place here at Kemper, which is all one thing. We're all together under one one umbrella, as you can say, and we're on about 1,450 feet of lakeshore, as you mentioned, on beautiful Lake Michigan. So we have a beautiful campus, a beautiful part of Kenosha County, and I just can't be more prouder of it and of our volunteers, of our board members, of our alumni. That all puts this thing together, and plus our donors as well.
Right.
You know, if it wasn't for all that, we wouldn't be here talking today.
Absolutely. I wonder if you could just talk for a moment about the brick-and-mortar stuff.
Sure.
Which, you know, at a glance might seem pretty mundane, but I have a feeling it's actually a pretty interesting and sometimes complicated matter, because when you're talking, it's one thing about, you know, when your back wall of your Burger King is crumbling and you need to fix it, but it's another thing when you're talking about truly historic structures in every sense of the word.
Yeah.
And my understanding is that when such structures receive kind of that designation of being historic sites, then the matter of how they are maintained down to specific matters becomes pretty complicated and probably sometimes a little expensive.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right on all counts, what you just mentioned there, Greg, because I can tell you a little bit. Let's talk about Anderson Arts Center, for instance. We did the big renovation project just a few years ago with city-county collaboration to get that done. That was quite a expensive project. And that was done because you had these two entities, the city and the county, working together for the common good of the whole community as a whole and the surrounding area by saving Anderson Arts Center, bringing it back to its natural state. And if you remember, years back, the shutters and the windows were kind of a brownish color. Well, they took all the layers of paint off when we did the renovation and came to that color, blackish gray, which we have now. Mm. That's the true original color. Any wood that needed to be replaced and repaired on either the any part of the structure, the windows, the shutters, that was sent to a wood specialist outside of Madison, Wisconsin. And when they rebuilt those things, they had to use the same wood species that was there originally.
Wow.
Back then. So that's the type of detail that was done. And as far as the roofing goes, you know, all that roofing clay tile was taken off. The underdeckings were redone. And then when the clay tile was put back, if you know, I noticed because I was there, anything around like the dormers, those clay tiles, and then around the chimneys, all those clay tiles were numbered, and they were put back to their original space. That's the detail that was done there. Not the field tile that, you know, just the rows and rows. I'm just talking about going around those certain objects of, like, the chimneys, the dormers, and that sort of thing. You know, extreme detail of that. The other thing is we have a geothermal heating and cooling system there.
Wow.
So there's 20 wells that are dug in that field in the back, which you don't see, obviously, and when they're 200 feet deep, there's 20 of them back there. So you're using the temperature of the earth to help heat and cool the building, which we didn't have before the renovation. But the other thing with the historical aspect, we can't have any kind of, you know, like at home, we have those air conditioners outside of our home, those box units on the outside. When you do a 360 around Anderson Arts Center, you won't see any of that. Just the natural, what was built back in 1929 to 31, it took that many years to build that, is the way it is now.
Wow.
So that's why they did the geothermal also. So.
Wow. And I suppose you end up engaging firms that specialize in this kind of renovation and repair of historic sites.
Yeah, absolutely. The county's done a phenomenal job in doing that. Like I said, it's a great partner working with them and getting this done and having those people that they have working for the county, finding these specialists, finding these great people to work on it, you know. So, you know, Steve Marple from Insight, wonderful man. I've learned a lot from him. He was the lead as far as the architectural part of the dwelling over there. He knows his stuff big time, and he's done a lot of big projects throughout the community here, and I've developed a great relationship with him, and then Camozzi Construction was in on that, and there's a lot of great contractors that were involved in that particular process over there, and they bring all that sort of attention to detail, which I think is important. because history is history, right? So let's keep it there.
Absolutely.
We can't rewrite it, right?
Yeah. Is there anything right now on the books in terms of new spaces? I mean, spaces at Kemper that need renovation or repair, or at the moment, are there no construction trucks
They're on site right now as we speak. Right now, I can tell you that on the Durkee Mansion, the roof is being replaced as we speak.
Mm.
So that's getting done, and we're getting new gutters put on there. We also had the chimneys retuck-pointed on the Durkee Mansion. Five chimneys, as you can imagine, because every room back in the day had a fireplace to heat it. So that's where, that was their natural way of heating back then. And the Founders Hall east side, the first and second floors, have been retuck-pointed this year, and the windows repainted and rescreened. So when you have older building, as you mentioned earlier, buildings throughout the complex, once you start on one end and you work your way around, you're going to be starting all over again. But that's the thing that you pay for preserving history. Right. You have to maintain it.
Absolutely. For those of you just joining us, we're talking today on the morning show about beautiful Kemper Center in Kenosha, just south of Kenosha's downtown, perched right on the lakefront on historic 3rd Avenue. And we're talking today with Ed Kubicki, who is executive director of Kemper Center, and Robin Ingruil, who is administrator at Kemper. Robin, maybe I'll ask you to do this, but Ed, feel free to chime in if need
sure.
be. For the sake of people who have only driven past Kemper, or even for those who have visited, I think even some of us who have actually been on the grounds might still appreciate being talked through kind of maybe north to south or south to north, how the campus is laid out. For instance, what we were just talking about, Anderson Art Center is at the far south end of the grounds of Kemper, and then there's that driveway, and then there's all of these other structures. Would you be able to just kind of talk us through geographically?
Sure. From the north end, we have Ambrose Hall, and that was the convent where the nuns lived. We had their offices, their living space, their kitchen. And then from there, there's a cloister that leads to the chapel.
Mm.
The Ambrose Hall was one of the last buildings added on. The it's cloister leading to the chapel. Then the chapel would be the second at 1875. And that is still pretty much all original, all the pews. The stained glass is beautiful. The graduating classes would donate a stained glass window.
Mm.
So it's just lovely. And then from there, you have a cloister. And that leads you to numerous places. You can go to the Durkee Mansion, which is the oldest structure on the site, or you can take a left and go into Founders Hall, which would have been the dining room where the girls had their dinners and breakfasts and everything. And then on the second floor, you have classrooms. We have the chem lab and the study hall up there, which we rent out for different occasions, and we have some of the classrooms up there, the library. We rent those out as offices. Right now we're at 100% capacity, so that's very nice.
Yeah.
So then you would go do kind of a U-turn, and you would go to another area, which we have our Lakefront Studios, which is above. We're now working our way over to the gymnasium. We have the gymnasium, but the third and fourth floor are the Lakefront Studios, which we rent out to artists. And those originally were dorm rooms for the girls.
Okay.
And above, we have an observatory, which was built in, I believe it's 1894, and that is still active. Carthage College has an individual who will have talks on certain days in the fall and the spring. On Friday nights, it's all free.
Hmm.
So in order to do that, you would have to probably call Carthage College, their astronomy department, to find out the times that they have these.
Right.
Brian Schwartz was the professor who does those nights.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much the third and fourth floor above Founders Hall, too. Those were dorm rooms also. Mm-hmm. Right now they're vacant. They need some construction work.
Mm-hmm. And I want to say, Robin just rattled all that off without looking at a pamphlet or a brochure or anything. but of course, you work there every day, so
yes.
I suppose you should know. But I mean, it really kind of underscores that it's lovely and idyllic, but it's also a complicated kind of maze of different structures, and many of them with different purposes and are put to different usages in the present day.
If you're wearing a Fitbit when you work there, you're making your walk. You're making your
steps.
You're getting
your steps in for sure.
Right. So you touched on the fact that some of the spaces at Kemper are actually rented for offices, so you actually have, in a sense, tenants on the grounds. And, of course, there are other ways in which the grounds of Kemper are utilized in some really interesting and exciting ways. Explain some of the spaces that are available for rental and usage by the public.
Well, there's five interior spaces which we rent out. It's Ambrose Hall, we can rent out. The Faulkner Building, that's that standalone building out back. The study hall on the second floor of the center. The actual first floor of the center, which is
Founders
Hall. And then we have two areas outside that we also rent, which is behind Anderson Arts Center for weddings and any kind of parties that you wish to have there. And behind Ambrose Hall, we have an outdoor section there that we rent out as well. So five interior spaces, two exterior spaces. We've got a lot to offer, different size groups, and we welcome everyone.
I want to say that I've been to probably 9 or 10 retreats over the times that I've lived in the area, retreats both with the radio station,
sure,
back when we had a larger staff, and music faculty retreats at Kemper as well. And it's an absolutely gorgeous, perfect place to have retreats. And, I mean, they can be, you know, relatively small, intimate, or pretty big groups.
And forgive me for saying this, we got to start those all over again, Greg. Come on back.
Very good. I know that some events take place there, including one that is celebrating its 20th anniversary this year. In case there's somebody listening who is not acquainted with it, explain what Twilight Jazz is and the wonderful history of this great event.
Yeah, Twilight Jazz started happening at the Anderson Arts Center back 20 years ago from this past year. We've just, with great musical jazz acts and which has been very exciting, free and open to the public. We have food trucks on the premise, and we also have vivations that you could purchase from us. We also have a 50-50 draw at these events, and that's part of the way we help sustain ourselves and our kids' programming, art programming that we offer during the summer months, and help sustain us and our staff and the buildings itself. Last night was our opening of Twilight Jazz series. It was with the John Crawford Band. We were supposed to have them on Tuesday, but due to rain, and obviously everyone knew how bad the weather was on Tuesday, they came on Wednesday, and that's what we've negotiated with our acts this year, is if it rains on the Tuesday, we'll go the following day. So I just want to make that clear. And then on the 27th, I can go over a little bit of the schedule if I could.
Please.
The 27th, we got the Street Jackson Band that's going to be performing. On July 11th is Carl Bendenhall Project, Bergenhall, excuse me. And then on July 25th will be Ivy Ford. August 8th will be David Braun Trio, and we'll finish off the series on August 22nd with Deep Pockets. And after Deep Pockets gets their performance done and it darkens up, we're going to have a fireworks display.
Wow.
To celebrate our 20th anniversary.
Love that.
That's just the musical acts on Anderson's grounds. Now we also have other acts that we've started, 2 years ago. We started the Lakeside Lounge. Next week, June 21st, will be the Chevelles. They'll be performing there from 6 to 8 p.m. The Chevelles will be performing 6 to 8. Please bring your own lawn chairs if you come to these events, because we only have so many picnic tables to go around, ladies
right.
and gentlemen. And then Jill Playstead Band will be on July 19th. And Stu the Piano Man will be on August 16th. We also have other events throughout the year. Fex Place has their annual, if I could talk about these, you don't mind.
Sure, that's great.
Fex Place holds their annual pig roast for benefiting wounded warriors. That's going to be an all-day thing on August 12th. September 8th, we're going to have Yesterday's Children playing. Grounds will open at 6 for that, and performance from 7 to 9. And we're still debating and working on possibly doing a fall-type fest with that because it's actually in the fall. Obviously, it's being in September. We're working with the International Horror Film Festival we're going to have there on September 29th through the 30th, Port of Fear.
I think you've done something like that before.
Last year.
That was last year, their maiden voyage, and they did well. And this year they're putting it closer to Halloween. And the Teen Task Force will have their haunted house in conjunction with the opening, so it should be really nice.
Oh, super idea.
Yeah, so we're working together and getting that going. And obviously we believe in all types of art form. Film is another art form, dance, obviously, and all this stuff here that we have at Kemper is just for the arts in general, I believe, and I believe all arts are important.
That's great. So do these end up being events that generate revenue for Kemper?
Yes.
And so there's an admission fee?
Well, for the musical acts that I mentioned to you, no. Twilight Jazz is free to get in. All the Lakeside Lounges are free to get in, all those performances. So actually, when you count them all out, and then Yesterday's Children, that will be also free. So I've put together with staff and volunteers and alumni, we got all these groups together, 10 free acts for the public. No county levy involved in that at all. That's all coming from donors to help us pay for these groups, to have them come in and perform beautifully for us.
Yeah. And then what ends up allowing you to make a little money off of these events, and if you're not charging admission?
Sure. Well, like I mentioned earlier, we do offer a cash bar there. And then we also do a 50-50, so that also helps generate funding for us. And then we sell popcorn of our own there. And so, you know, you put those three things together, and we do quite well. And the people have been quite generous, and they've always been that way. And they understand, and they believe in the arts as well as we do, and it's great.
That's fantastic.
Our biggest fundraiser being our Christmas, when the Durkee Mansion is decorated, and we have a gala that kicks off the season. And that is always the Saturday after Thanksgiving. Well, that is a paid event, but the rest of the week is free for the public to go through.
Ah, okay.
And then we've moved that from the Anderson Arts Center to Kemper Center during the renovation. We moved it, obviously, because they were working on that during that period of time. But we also, at Kemper Center, have more space to have more trees and more wreaths and centerpieces. We also have an elevated building, wheelchair accessible. So we want to be inclusive, not exclusive, at Kemper Center. That's our big goal there.
Great, great. Tell us what's going on at Anderson Arts Center at the moment. And that's certainly a lovely place that people especially should visit if they haven't seen it since the renovation.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a new show opening up, matter of fact, this Sunday.
25th.
So we got 2 weeks for that to open. That's a new show. So we're in between shows right now. And Robin already took a sneak peek, right? And
I heard from Robin,
it's fabulous.
It really is. But you have a lot of private individuals with their areas, and it's like, ooh, I can't wait to get to the next room because this room was exciting. The next one should even be better.
Wow. Different people with their own collections?
They're all part of a group, but they all have their different genres, what they're doing.
Okay.
And I went through and I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't wait for the next room.
That's exactly what you want, an exhibit like that.
Right.
So that's at the Anderson Art Center.
Right.
That'll be opening in a couple of weeks. That sounds like the last weekend in June.
Right.
That's right.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, we're talking about Kemper Center with Ed Kubicki, who is the executive director there, and Robin Ingruil, who is the administrator. They've both been on staff at Kemper for the last 5 years or so. 17 and a half gorgeous acres. It is, in a sense, a not just in a sense, it is, in fact, a Kenosha County park, the grounds of Kemper Center. And as Ed Kubicki was explaining earlier, Kemper exists and functions in a lovely symbiotic relationship between private and public entities. And you were saying each and every year you plunk down a whole dollar for Kemper to lease these grounds from Kenosha County. So Kenosha County actually owns the grounds and you lease them.
That's correct.
Yes.
Does Kenosha County also own the buildings that are on the grounds?
Yeah, they're the stewards of the building. Yes.
Very good. So explain kind of the potential for any of this to change. That is there the possibility with grounds that are located where they are in such a beautiful place? Is it possible that at some point there might be some shifts? I know that a questionnaire was circulated by Kenosha County that was kind of asking for public input in terms of some possible changes of one kind or another.
Yeah,
what can you tell us about that?
Sure, thanks for asking that question. There's a Keene group that's doing a study. They're out of Colorado and Arizona, and they're doing a study that how can Kemper and Anderson improve its stance in the community, and how can we improve to be more self-sustaining is part of what the study is going to hopefully come out to help us in. And we're all open arms in that because, like I said earlier in the program, I'm all about historic preservation and maintaining Kemper as it is. We're on the historic docket for all our buildings there. The buildings can't be torn down or anything like that nature, and so we know that, so that's a good thing. It's just how can we improve our stance and help sustain ourselves, and we're trying to figure out how we can all do that. And we're, like I said, we're all open to good suggestions and that sort of thing. So the study is ongoing. It won't finish up till the early part of next year, I think, is when we're going to get the results of that. January, February, I believe, is the last I heard.
Right.
Come up with that.
Absolutely. So for people that are interested in the story of Kemper and want to be supportive of Kemper, I have a feeling there are a couple of different ways that can happen. And Robin, you were saying that your involvement with Kemper started out as a volunteer once upon a time. You said as a decorator in the Durkee Mansion?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we're always open for anyone who would love to be a volunteer at Kemper. We have something for everyone, whatever you would like to do, decorating, working an event, helping with mailings, all sorts of things. And we don't say you have to do everything. Do what you love to do. Mm-hmm. Come. If you just love to decorate, just decorate. If you like to meet the public and be a docent in one of the museum, be a docent. Never do more than what you want. Make it a time of joy. It should be a joyful experience.
Well put. I think that's great. This matter of being a docent in a museum, explain what the sort of museum spaces are at Kemper.
Okay, so Durkee Mansion, which is open from April through October, the first and third weekends of the month, from 1:30 to 4:30, you would be a greeter. You'd be helping people with self-guided tours. We would give you a little brief history so that you would be able to answer questions. There's pamphlets to hand out also. So you would more or less be an informant for the museum and a greeter.
Yeah.
The same with Anderson Arts. Those are the two places. Sometimes, we haven't since COVID, we would have twice a year grand tours where we would have volunteers throughout the building and we would have people instruct you on what every other part of the building would be. We also had alumni do that, which was fascinating because we had from different generations given a talk of what it was like to go to school at Kemper Center.
And that to me is the best to hear from an actual individual that went to school there. That historical aspect of it is huge.
Mm-hmm.
They actually were there when it was open and in a school. It's big. It's just big.
Alumni from the 1950s, 1960s, and 1970s being able to tell what their experience at that particular decade was.
Right. And, of course, that kind of school is exceedingly rare nowadays. I mean, schools like Kemper Hall, boarding schools where at least many of the young women lived there, right on campus, lived there, ate there, studied there, played there. Yeah, that in and of itself is a fascinating story. And like I said, we had a wonderful conversation on the morning show. Was that last year, the big celebration with the anniversary? Or was that,
was last year. Yeah.
Right. And again, a celebration that was delayed because of COVID, but which allowed alums from across the country to come to southeastern Wisconsin and relive some happy, happy days at Kemper Hall. Let's talk about ways in which financially people could be supportive of Kemper Center.
Well, you can also go to our website, and you can accept your donations there, or you can just contact Kemper directly, and we'll be happy to send you out a form if you want to do it that way. Or you can just stop in, and we'll be happy to accept your donations that way. Anyway. Yeah, I'll come and meet you, and I'll talk to you about Kemper Center and its importance in the community and how important it is. And if you want to donate that way, that I'll take your money any way I can get it. I guess that's legal. Okay, let's call it that way. I say that in jest, obviously. I mean, I got to watch what I say because I'm still electing officials, so I got to be careful.
Exactly. So you're going to. Not go quite as far as armed robbery
I won't stiff arm you.
Yeah, that's like right. That. But in all seriousness, of course, it is a very, very worthy cause, and there are all kinds of different ways in which people can volunteer their time and donate their money to be part of all of this. Kemper Center, we should mention, is a nonprofit organization, correct?
501c3, yes, sir.
Very good. Well, it's been great to hear from you about the story of Kemper Center, all that it has to offer. We've covered a lot of ground, and we would certainly direct people, if they want to find out even more information, to go to your beautiful website, which I was navigating the other day and found to be very, very attractive and easy to navigate, which I really appreciated. I don't remember the web address. Do you happen to remember the
www.kempercenter.com.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah. Very good.
Straightforward. Straightforward.
So we invite people to investigate that, and there you'll find, of course, a list of all of the different events, including the new exhibit at Kemper's Anderson Art Center that is opening the last weekend in June, and the next Twilight Jazz event will be coming up when?
Next Twilight Jazz is June 27th with the Street Jackson Band. But before that, I'm going to have the Lakefront Lounge on June 21st with the Chevelles. In that area, where we have the Lakeside Lounge is behind the Faulkner Building. So it's the furthest north building on our campus. And if you go into our parking lot, head north after you get into the parking lot, you'll see where it's at back there.
Excellent. We hope people will check that out and all of the other fun things going on the beautiful grounds of Kemper Center. Ed Kubicki, Executive Director, Robin Ingerwill, Administrator, thank you so much for making time in your schedules to be part of the morning show today. It was wonderful to talk with you.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you as well, and thanks for having us.
You're listening to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and to finish out today's program, we're going to listen back to a brief interview I was thrilled to record back in 2002 on the occasion of the 75th anniversary of Charles Lindbergh's historic plane flight across the Atlantic Ocean. This conversation with his grandson, Eric Lindbergh. Well, it is not every day that one has the pleasure and thrill of speaking with someone who seems to embody a very important moment in world history. I am speaking today with Eric Lindbergh, who is a grandson of Charles Lindbergh. And we speak today on the occasion of the release of a superb new book called Lindbergh, Flight's Enigmatic Hero, by Von Hardesty, curator of the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum. And the foreword in the book is written by grandson Eric Lindbergh, whom we have on the phone. Eric Lindbergh, a pleasure to be talking with you today.
Well, thanks, Greg.
In the foreword to this beautiful book, you recount the experience of, in a sense, recreating something of your grandfather's groundbreaking experience in 1927
of crossing the Atlantic alone. Tell us a little bit about what precipitated your interest in doing that, in making a similar sort of flight.
Oh, you know, it really was more or less a taboo. I don't think that I really could have revisited this historic flight at all had it not been for the fact that I became disabled when I was 30 years old with rheumatoid arthritis, and then sort of had another chance at life through surgeries and new miracle drugs, I guess you would call it. You know, my grandfather tried to live that flight so intensely and became so famous that I think he tried most of his life to avoid going back to it. And if someone said, you know, tell me about the flight, he'd say, read the book, even if they were family members. So, you know, for me to revisit this, I had to sort of die in some way and then come back and realize, you know, I've got a second chance at life. I need to do something with that. And it allowed me to sort of break free from that, reticence, I guess, and really allow me to look back and understand what this was that affected my life so much. And then to be able to write about it was, it's really an extraordinary gift.
In what way did you try to parallel your grandfather's experience in 1927? I mean, obviously you were not flying the same plane nor an identical model. But
no,
in other ways,
crazy.
Yeah, right. But in any other ways, I mean, for instance, did you seek to duplicate essentially his flight path or his schedule, or in any other way did you?
For me, what I really wanted to do with the flight was to celebrate it and to help to educate people and raise money for nonprofit charities. The similarities in flights were really I left from the same places, went from San Diego to St. Louis, where grandfather's backers were, and then St. Louis to New York, and then New York to Paris. The other similarities, a small single-engine aircraft. That's about it. I had modern communications and GPS units to navigate with and autopilot and, a nice comfortable chair.
Unlike the wicker chair that your grandfather sat in for his flight.
Oh, yeah. You know, for me, the prime directive was to survive. And having flown a replica of the Spirit of St. Louis, very unstable aircraft, not difficult to fly, just difficult to fly straight and or level. Two things very important to long distance navigation. But what it really did for me was allowed me to look back at the past from a very personal standpoint and showcase what could be done with the state of the art of the present by someone who couldn't walk, 6 years ago, and look forward into the future of flight and what is that. And I believe it's space flight, and so I promoted my vision of the future.
You have helped to step up a technological search for renewable flight into space. You're hoping that someone can develop a vessel which can be reused in space.
Oh, yeah. Well, people forget that two things primarily developed aviation, warfare and prizes. And by offering a prize, you stimulate R&D towards your goal, and that's what grandfather was flying across the Atlantic for. That's what we're doing with the XPRIZE Foundation, putting up a $10 million prize for the first privately funded suborbital reusable launch vehicle that can take three people into space and return safely. That, I think, really holds the hopes and desires of many of us to fly into space and see what our planet looks like from space.
Did you know your grandfather?
Oh, yeah. I was 9 when he died. And, you know, I knew him as a kid knows a grandfather. He was very fun.
What is your sense of this particular book by Von Hardesty? I assume you have looked at it, read it with great interest. Do you feel like it does a good job of capturing your grandfather and what he accomplished?
Oh, absolutely. This is a very special book from the standpoint that, number one, it captures the essence of my grandfather. It corrects some of the myths that have been published even that about my grandfather. So it's very true to, I think, his life. But more importantly, the pictures and the timeline, as you read every page, immerse you in that time period. And I've never read a book like that about my grandparents where I became so invested in the time, the flavor of the time that it was back in 1927 and during World War II and further periods of his life that really make this book extraordinary.
Right. How do you feel that it handles the some of the controversial matters that that plagued your grandfather later on in his life, some of the political views he held that were not universally held by others? Do you feel like some of those interesting, difficult questions are handled well here?
Oh, I think they're handled very well. My grandfather was certainly human, and he made certain mistakes. However, it deals with them in a very accurate way. The Vaughn, in his writing, he did extraordinary research and I think really corrected some of the myths surrounding that. For instance, you know, people always say off the cuff, there's a perpetuated myth that being an isolationist in 1939, 1940, before World War II was, you know, an extreme view. Well, 80% of the public held that view. They did not want to get into World War II. That, of course, all changed with the bombing of Pearl Harbor. But, you know, he did the best he could with what he could at the time, I think, and had obviously a very different perspective than anyone else in the world because he lived a different life.
That he did. Eric Lindbergh, grandson of Charles Lindbergh, we are so appreciative of your time and of your part in this very beautiful book about your grandfather called Lindbergh, Flight's Enigmatic Hero. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much.
This weekend, on the podcast version of The Morning Show, a couple of interesting interviews from the archives will be aired, including something special for Father's Day on Sunday. Tomorrow on the podcast of The Morning Show, a conversation from about two decades ago with Dr. Sylvia Beyer from the psychology faculty at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. A really interesting conversation about gender bias in the world of higher education, and in particular, some of the stereotypes in the minds of college students in terms of understanding who studies what. A really, really interesting conversation about some very interesting research done by Professor Beyer. That'll be on tomorrow's podcast. To hear the podcast version of The Morning Show, subscribe by looking for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. You can hear it via Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Next week, our broadcast of The Morning Show will feature actually a couple of brand new interviews and a couple of archival interviews as well. Monday, James Kwok, author of The Fear of Too Much Justice, Race, Poverty, and the Persistence of Inequality in the Criminal Courts. On Tuesday, something for dog lovers. Stanley Coren, author of How Dogs Think, What the World Looks Like to Them and Why They Act the Way They Do, and Emily Yaffe's book, What the Dog Did, Tales from a Formerly Reluctant Dog Owner. Next Wednesday, from the archives, a conversation with the late Dr. Don Cummings, longtime professor of English at UW Parkside, talking about his book, A Companion to Walt Whitman. Next Thursday, we'll be talking about the brand new Kids Almanac 2024 from National Geographic and a favorite from the archives, Trevor Corson's book, The Secret Life of Lobsters. 1 week from today, Josh Haven talks about his